Hey there, listeners. Vermont Edition co-host Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited and condensed for clarity and brevity. Enjoy.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Vermont's delegation to Congress is about to experience a major shakeup for the first time in many years. Longtime Senator Patrick Leahy is retiring, and Vermont's sole representative to the House, Peter Welch, is running to fill Leahy's seat. That leaves Vermont's one and only House seat up for grabs. Now, Vermont Edition has interviewed all five Democratic candidates, and there are also two Republicans running. Today, we welcome one of them to the show. Erica Reddick is a Burlington accountant and bookkeeper and a Republican candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. She also shares a lot about herself and her political views on her social media and YouTube feeds. Erica Reddick, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much for having me, Michaela.
All right, Erica, let's start where we've started with all of our candidates for this seat. Why do you want to be Vermont's next representative in the U.S. House?
That is a great question and probably one of the most important questions that you can ask. As a Vermonter born and raised, I'm not seeing Vermont values being represented in Washington. And so, you know, I've lived all over the country. I moved to Texas in 2010. My husband and I lived in Hollywood. And so I've really had the opportunity to see what it looks like to what governance looks like all across the country, whether it's in a very conservative state like Texas or a very liberal state like California. And I've gotten the opportunity to see what works and what doesn't. So when I moved back to Vermont in 2018 and saw that, the politics didn't seemed no longer fair here. It seemed like people like me, people on the conservative side of the aisle, are not represented fairly, and they're not listened to by their current legislature. I know personally, I've written to all of my senators and representatives dozens and dozens of times and almost never hear back. I think I've gotten three emails back since 2018. And that's just not what leadership looks like. That's not what representation looks like. And I believe Vermonters can do better. The problems that we're facing, the struggles that we're dealing with require good decision-making, common sense, and those Vermont values I was raised with, like hard work, perseverance, self-determination, and grit. And those are the things that I'll bring to Washington.
Now, unlike some of the other candidates running to fill this seat, you have not held office before in Vermont. So Vermonters might not be particularly familiar with you and your story yet. So what would you want potential voters to know about your background?
Great question again. First of all, I think it's actually a positive thing that I don't have legislative experience. I think a lot of Vermonters can look at their wallets and look at their homes and they can see for themselves that the current leadership, they're not better off, right? We're more poor, we're less safe. And so the policies of our current leadership is just not working for us. And as an accountant, and as a small business consultant, I've been working for much of the last 20 years. I've been a problem solver and a solution finder. It's literally my job when I'm working with my clients to take the information that they give me, compile it into a usable, understandable format for all stakeholders, whether it's the owner of the company, their employees, any bank considering loaning them, things like that. Taking that information, making it usable and understandable, and then taking that information to help those business owners or individuals make good decisions, develop practical solutions to deal with whatever it is they're facing. I've helped multiple businesses pull out of bankruptcy, avoid closing, avoid having to fire staff and pivot their business model, especially over the last two and a half years with COVID. So many businesses had to pivot and change their business model to try to adapt and cope. And that's really what I'm good at. What I'm really good at is taking intel, finding, researching, getting the best information, and helping create impactful, long-lasting change.
Let's get into some of the policies that you would push for if elected to represent Vermont in Washington. Erica Reddick, you have posted a lot about your personal life on social media, on your YouTube feed, including about your time in prison stemming from a drug addiction and your subsequent work to achieve sobriety. And watching some of those videos, I was curious to hear more about your stance on the intersections of drug addiction and the criminal justice system, both in Vermont and nationally. So if elected to Congress, how exactly would you seek to address issues like drug criminalization? Would you favor a tough on crime approach or a more public health centered approach?
That is an interesting way to frame that question. I want to just first say, you know, I celebrated 13 years sober this year, and it's those Vermont values that I was raised with that helped me to achieve that. Another thing that helped me achieve that was actually being arrested and held accountable for my crimes. You know, we want to be careful not to criminalize drug addiction, but the reality is Vermont has the highest rate of drug abuse in the country. And we've seen the highest rate of suicides and drug overdoses. We've seen the highest increase in the country. And so it's clear that something needs to change, right? I can tell you that getting arrested and being held accountable is one of the biggest reasons why I'm sober today. I'm grateful for it. And I have thanked everyone through the process for that. One thing that we absolutely have to do is secure our borders. We need to make sure that the southern border and the northern border are protected. We've seen record amounts of fentanyl and drug trafficking, human trafficking coming across our southern border. Millions, literally, there's so much fentanyl being seized. Just what's being seized, okay? So not even what's making it across, but what's being seized is enough to kill millions of Americans. And so if we're going to talk about what we need to do about drug addiction, drug abuse, and things like that, we first need to address the source and where those things are coming from. So first, we got to secure the southern border. We got to secure the northern border, make sure illegal drugs aren't being brought here.
Sorry, I would like to dive into that a bit more. When you're saying secure the southern and northern borders, what exactly are you referring to? What policies would you want to see change? Or are you talking about a wall on one or either borders? Say more.
You know, a wall is not necessarily practical in all places, but my nephew's actually a Border Patrol agent in South Texas. So I have known about the humanitarian crisis on our border for many, many years, long before the previous administration started highlighting it to the nation. So border wall, from what I've been told and from, you know, again, what I do with my social media, if everybody wants to go to Generally Irritable on Facebook and YouTube, is I bring on experts to talk about and educate myself and others about what problems we're facing and what are some possible solutions. So I'm doing that already for Vermonters. Go to Generally Irritable, check those out. But when I've talked to folks about what to do on the southern border, a border wall makes sense in some areas. We need to restore some of the policies of the previous administration, like the Remain in Mexico policy. We need to make sure that we're deporting folks who cannot demonstrate a connection here, people who are crossing illegally. We need to make sure that we are processing people well to make sure we're not letting terrorists and drug dealers into our country, which they have been able to identify some of those folks. We need to make sure we have enough funding for Border Patrol agents to, you know, to make sure that those borders are secure. We need to give as much support and aid to states like Texas, Arizona, and California to make sure they also can secure their border. I mean, I know ranchers, particularly in South Texas, who literally find dead bodies littered across their property. And so I think if we can restore some of those same policies, and really the biggest thing is is changing the attitude from, hey, everybody who feels like they would benefit from coming here, come on over, right? Which is really what our current administration and our current legislature is saying. They're saying, it's okay, everybody come, we'll take you. So we need to stop that attitude. We need to let people know that if they want to come to America, they need to use the legal immigration system.
Well, let's go to one of the other major topics on the docket today, climate change. On your website, you outline several, quote unquote, myths about conservatives. One is that conservatives don't believe in climate change and don't care about addressing it. So, Erica Redick, do you believe in climate change? And with your background in finance and accounting, how would you pay for investments our country needs to address it?
I believe that our environment is changing, right? The weather does seem to be changing. I can tell you that the last couple of years, I'm 44 years old. I don't remember ever a year having 80, 90, 100 degree weather in Vermont for days at a time. I was in Texas when the ice storm happened last winter. So clearly there's some weird stuff going on, and I don't think anybody can deny that. But, you know, growing up in Vermont, I learned right away as a child to be a good steward of my environment. All of my friends and family that are hunters and fishermen and things like that, everyone I know cares about the environment, wants to make sure we have healthy animals, healthy plants, right? Your last guest was talking about this invasive moth that's a problem, right? We all, Vermonters really care about that stuff. That's why the state of Vermont already sequesters carbon. And that's been the case for many years. So basically, for folks that don't know, what that means is we actually basically recycle carbon more than we use it because of our trees and our environmental policies. And so what I want to see is an opening of the market to allow for as much innovation, renovation, and invention as possible in the realm of renewable energy and, you know, environmental progress, really. Now, what I don't think is okay is offshoring our pollution to poor countries. So as an example, I have a real problem with much of the solar and wind turbine industry and electric vehicles, because in order to build those, you have child slave labor in countries like Africa, Indonesia, and China, Uyghur Muslims who are slaves in China, building these products and then shipping them across oceans here to Vermont and states around the country. So we're sending our money to countries that do not respect human rights. They do not respect labor laws. They do not care about human beings.
I'm sorry, Erica, I just want to make sure I'm hearing your point correctly. Are you saying that investing in, expanding the use of electric vehicles, for example, in the United States is not a good way to combat climate change because the electric vehicles are being built by child slaves in other countries?
I'm saying that the parts and the rare earth minerals to make solar panels and EV cars are mined by child slave laborers and slave labor in China. I'm saying that there's no infrastructure to actually accommodate all of the electric vehicles. We don't produce enough energy here in Vermont to pay for these things. And their only solutions to fix that are to buy more power from Hydro-Quebec, which creates methane, and again, is sending our money to a foreign country for our power instead of producing it ourselves. So if we want to start switching things over to electric, we have to have a serious conversation about next generation nuclear, which in reality today is the only thing that can support that kind of shift in energy and in resources. So if we're going to demonize fossil fuels, if we're going to say we don't want people to use them, then we have to offer them a viable solution that doesn't just offshore our pollution to poor countries.
Now, we've interviewed a lot of candidates, both Democrats and Republicans, and we've been trying to help our listeners figure out where they fit within their party, which I think is a particularly important question when you're thinking about, heading to Washington and making those strategic allies in Congress to help get bills passed and policies pushed forward. We've asked Democrats, for example, if they're more aligned with Bernie Sanders or more centrist in their approach. So as a Republican, I'm curious who in your party you align with. What alliances would you make if sent to Washington? What other politicians do you think you would work well with?
Well, you know what's interesting, actually, one of the policy positions I hope to present and get passed in Washington is term limits. And interestingly enough, even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a Democratic socialist, wants to see term limits in Congress. So I really have seen areas where I can work across the aisle with Democrats, progressives, whomever, to get policies passed that will benefit the American people. But I would say, you know, as far as currently elected officials in that are already in Washington, Rand Paul is a really good example of someone who I look up to for his sensible, practical approach to solving problems. You know, many folks know he's very libertarian, and I identify very much with the Libertarian Party. And as a libertarian, I'm like a cross between conservative libertarian. Because what I believe is that the American people, I believe Vermonters, are fully capable of making the best possible decisions for themselves and for their families. I don't think that Vermonters need me to tell them what is going to work best for them and what they need. I think they know best what they need. And so the more we can allow Americans and Vermonters to make their own decisions, to decide how they best can contribute to reducing climate change and global warming, how they can best contribute to their families and to their community, we really need to just kind of get government out of the way and let the American people make the best decisions for themselves and their families.
And lastly, before we have to go, we have just about a minute left here, Erica. I'm curious to hear how you would address the housing crisis here in Vermont, one of the major issues facing Vermonters today and people across the country. What's one policy that you would push for to address that?
Well, what the housing issue in Vermont really needs to be addressed by the Vermont legislature and not by the federal government. The reason we have problems building housing here in Vermont is because of things like Act 250 and then even more restrictive policies. You know, if I want to build a 10-unit apartment building, I'm paying $250,000 in Act 250 fees and permits before I've even got an architectural drawing or put a shovel in the ground. And so really it's government overreach that is making it so people do not want to invest in building here. So Vermont really needs to make a concerted effort to make this a more friendly environment where people are willing to spend their money and invest in housing.
Erica Reddick is a Burlington accountant and bookkeeper and a Republican candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. Erica, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Michaela.